Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's T-minus 4 days to the Florida GOP primary, and at last night's debate, the last debate before Tuesday's vote, the candidates seem to be going all out. In a series of the most combative exchanges so far this primary season, enlightening, maybe not, combative, definitely, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum came out swinging, and Newt Gingrich felt the blows. Joining me to talk about last night's debate is Jennifer Rubin, who writes the conservative blog, or well, she's one of the contributors to the conservative blog, Right Turn, for The Washington Post. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. Actually, the Right Turn blog is my blog.
That is your blog.
Other contributors.
Forgive me. This was really a debate between Gingrich and Romney, in a way, with a little bit of Santorum on the side and Ron Paul making his signature points. Obama barely figured in at all. Santorum, I thought, had a very good debate, though, actually, trying to portray himself as maybe a little tougher, a little angrier himself, but standing outside the Romney-Gingrich fray. What'd you think?
Well, there's lots of that I disagree with. I don't think Rick Santorum was angry at all. I think he was trying to make the argument, and he did successfully, that he's more conservative than both Romney and Gingrich. And in his closing statement, he pulled together a series of facts and made the argument that he wasn't in favor of what he calls a top-down health care system. He didn't support TARP, and he also made an appeal, of course, that he is more suited to appeal to key blue-collar voters in swing states. As far as the other candidates go, I think both Santorum and Romney had very good nights, and both took it out on Gingrich. I thought Santorum was extremely effective, not only with Gingrich, but also with Romney. He put Romney through the paces on his own health care plan. But I think it really was, to a large degree, Romney's night. He clearly came out swinging. I think last week put a scare into them. They didn't want to have another bad week. They didn't want to lose the Florida primary. And as a result, they marshaled their arguments, pinned him down pretty decisively, I think, on a number of topics, including his association with Freddie Mac, including his sort of silly space colony idea. And I think the Romney people were genuinely pleased. And certainly in the press accounts and the reviews, they are delighted.
Gingrich continued to try to make the case that Romney's finances and investments disqualify him from serious candidacy or come close, particularly that Romney had investments in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and Goldman Sachs, and that he was tied to foreclosure in Florida, even while Romney is trying to ding Gingrich for his association with Freddie Mac. And here's Romney's defense.
I have a trustee that manages my investments in a blind trust. That was so that I would avoid any conflicts of interest. That trustee indicated last week when he was asked about this, he said that he wanted to diversify the investments that I had. And for a while, he had money in a Swiss account reported in the U.S., full taxes paid on it, U.S. taxes. There's nothing wrong with that. And I know that there may be some who try and make a deal of that, as you have out publicly. But look, I think it's important for people to make sure that we don't castigate individuals who've been successful and try and, by innuendo, suggest there's something wrong with being successful and having investments and having a return on those investments.
So I thought that this was Romney's best defense of his wealth, whereas he has looked defensive about his wealth. He looked proud of his wealth, sounded proud of his wealth as an asset for America, he went on to say later in that answer, rather than as a problem. And I thought he distinguished himself much more on that topic than he has in the past. What did you think?
Agree with that. There's also another segment. I'm not sure whether it came at the tail end of what you already played or whether it was another segment where he came back on the issue of investments in Freddie Mac. And he essentially explained that his investment advisor, the blind trustee, invests in mutual funds, which in turn invest in Freddie, and that Gingrich has the same problem or the same issue. And Gingrich was, I think, flabbergasted. I don't think he knew that. I don't think he saw that coming. That's what a good campaign team and a good Oppo research team will do for you. I do agree that Romney has decided to shed his reticence about his wealth. I was speaking to one of his strong supporters, a relatively well-known Republican office holder, who said that Romney in the past, in discussions with him privately, has seemed somewhat embarrassed, reticent about his wealth. He's not the kind of guy to kind of show off and to brag about it. And as a result, he was very slow to respond to a lot of these attacks and unwilling to defend and say, yeah, I'm successful, yeah, I've made it, and this is why we want to support these policies that promote these types of activities. I think the scare last week got him excited enough to make that case, and he certainly made it last night. He made it a little bit on the earlier debate on Monday, but last night, I agree, he really kind of rammed it home.
According to a fact check from the AP, however, disclosure forms show Romney owned between $250,000 and $500,000 in Federated Government Obligation Fund, which contained mutual fund notes of politically sensitive Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And in other words, not everything that he had in Freddie and Fannie was in a blind trust, so he could have known about it.
I don't think that's actually accurate. According to his investment advisors and Ben Ginsburg, who held the conference call for all of the reporters who are looking at this earlier in the week, the money is contained within three different accounts, either a blind trust set up for the Tyler Foundation, a blind trust for Ann Romney, or a blind trust for Romney himself. However, they file a fourth return, which is their own personal income tax. But as far as my understanding was, speaking to the guy who is the blind trustee, those are under his auspices.
It was Santorum last night who called enough on the line of attack on finances in both directions. In one of his fiery answers, where he actually made his presence really known and got the support of the crowd himself, let's listen.
The bigger issue here is these two gentlemen who are out distracting from the most important issues we have by playing petty personal politics. Can we set aside that Newt was a member of Congress and used the skills that he developed as a member of Congress to go out and advise companies, and that's not the worst thing in the world, and that Mitt Romney is a wealthy guy because he worked hard and he's going out and working hard, and you should, guys, leave that alone and focus on the issue.
Jennifer, I thought that was a fascinating answer, in part because he criticized them both by praising them both.
Well, I think he did two things. One, he played the Newt Gingrich game on Newt Gingrich, which was sort of trying to rise above the question and give it to the moderator just a little bit, who, incidentally, I thought did a really wonderful job. I think Wolf Blitzer deserves a lot of credit last night for keeping things on track and not letting them devolve into sort of a floor show the way some previous debates have. I do think this is, of course, the way that Santorum is going to elevate himself. He has to make the argument that he's the better alternative to Romney than Gingrich, and he's got to make the argument that he's a less flawed candidate, particularly from the conservatives' perspective, than Romney. So you're going to see a lot of this where he kind of lumps them together. If you recall, before she dropped out of the race, Michelle Bachmann did a variation of this, calling them Newt Romney. And the reason they do that is because conservatives have not yet, the people who identify themselves as very conservative, have not yet really accepted Mitt Romney. And if there is going to be someone who is going to challenge him seriously, it's going to have to be someone who can grab all of those voters, the Tea Partiers, the social conservatives, very conservative voters, and be able to show a strong contrast. So that's why he's doing it. Now, I think this particular example may not have been the best one, because what's going on here is really a character issue for Gingrich that does not exist for Romney. Gingrich has, in essence, denied that he was influence peddling. You remember his whole song and dance about being a historian and all the rest of it.
Right.
So I think with Gingrich, there's a credibility issue, there's a character issue, there's a truth-telling issue. But certainly from Santorum's perspective, that was a good moment. He had lots of other very strong moments last night. I've been following him for a long time for reasons I don't quite understand. Much of the rest of the conservative media has ignored him and somehow latched on to Gingrich as the better of the two candidates. I think we saw last night that if conservatives want a standard bearer, they would do a lot better with Rick Santorum than they would with Newt Gingrich.
Jennifer Rubin writes the Right Turn column for the Washington Post. But Santorum is giving up on Florida, apparently, at least to the extent that he's leaving the state today, from what I understand, and not coming back before the primary, right?
No, that's not correct. I interviewed him before the debate. He is going home for two reasons. One, he has a fundraiser in Philadelphia, and two, he has to go do his taxes because that's become an issue for him as well. He is returning to Florida on Sunday. He's going to have an appearance maybe at a church as well, but also a synagogue. He'll be campaigning all day Sunday and all day Monday. He told me in the phone conversation just before the debate he'll be leaving Florida on Tuesday. As he put it, that's a voting day, not a campaigning day. He didn't specify to me exactly where he's going, but I think the notion that he's sort of given up in Florida is probably wishful thinking on behalf of the Gingrich campaign. And I think the dynamic that listeners have to understand here is virtually every vote that Santorum is going to get is going to come out of Gingrich. And that's, I think, what's going on here. If Santorum can supplant Gingrich as the favorite of this more conservative element of the electorate, then he can rise. I don't think they can both, either one of them can survive with both of them in the race.
And the conventional wisdom is that Santorum, even though he's been getting relatively low numbers since Iowa, is hanging around just in case Newt Gingrich's star falls so much, which is always possible with Gingrich.
Yes, it's a good bet.
And that he has to drop out, and then Santorum becomes the last not Romney standing other than Ron Paul. And in fact, it was Santorum who really brought the president into the fold last night. So I'm going to play another Santorum clip. This was over an hour into the debate, but this is on the Obama health reform.
This is the top-down model that both of these gentlemen say they're now against, but they've been for, and it does not provide the contrast we need with Barack Obama if we're going to take on that most important issue. We cannot give the issue of health care away in this election. It is too foundational for us to win this election.
And again, when he talks about these two gentlemen say they're now against, both Romney and Gingrich at one time or another have supported the individual mandate and other aspects of what's in the Obama health care. So he's trying to criticize the president, is Santorum, and at the same time criticize his two rivals. Jennifer, I wonder if you've heard these rumors or if there's, you know, any real sourcing to be done about this thought that if Gingrich actually wins Florida, then the Republican establishment, whoever that really means, is going to go ballistic. I think John Heilman in New York Magazine said there's going to be a Republican Party meltdown that's going to make Three Mile Island look like a marshmallow roast, which would involve leaders of the party. I've heard William Crystal's name mentioned and others who would go in search of some alternative who's not in the race, but not Santorum, to stop Gingrich because they think it would be such a disaster for the party if Gingrich gets the nomination. One version of this has different Republicans getting in different state primaries as favorite son candidates just in their home states, all to, I guess, clear the decks for, I don't know, Christie, Jeb Bush, whoever, to come in closer to the primary. Do you think there's any truth to this if Gingrich wins?
Zero. First of all, he's not going to win. And second of all, this is extremely wishful thinking either by conservatives or liberals who actually buy this sort of stuff. No, I think there are none of these people who are willing and able to get into the race. I can say from personal direct contact at one time or another, Chris Christie absolutely will not get in the race, neither will Mitch Daniels. And this notion that there's somebody out there on a white horse, I think has been propagated long after there was some feasible plan to do so. There is nobody out there. And frankly, if there were some group of establishment Republicans, and as you say, I'm not sure we even have a definition of who these people are, when someone else entered the race, all they would do would be subdivide the race further and probably enable Gingrich, because Romney wouldn't drop out. He would stay in to fight. Santorum wouldn't drop in. He would stay in to fight. So all you do is be introducing another not Newt candidate
So you don't think
Newt.
So. I want to make sure I get in a Ron Paul clip as well from last night. And I think, again, after that debate, people can't help kind of really being drawn to Ron Paul for his genuineness, whether or not they agree with all his policies. So here's the moment where, of course, as everybody else is bashing the Castros in the Florida primary, he was asked what he would say if Raul Castro were to call him up on the phone.
Well, I'd ask him what he called about, you know. What was the purpose of his call? No, I would ask him, what can we do to improve relations? because I wouldn't see them as likely to attack us. But today, to not to talk to them and take the call and see what you can work out helps Castro. It hurts the people.
So an unpopular position to take in a Florida Republican primary, probably, but he's not afraid of taking unpopular positions. Paul got 20% in Iowa. He approached it in New Hampshire, less in South Carolina. But if anybody was under the illusion that he's a serious contender for the nomination, is that over?
Yeah, it is over. What he can't do is, when the numbers get bigger in a big state like Florida, where you're talking about 2 million primary voters, he doesn't have enough of a critical mass to keep that up. In a small state, he can rally his troops, and there's fewer votes to get and fewer votes that he needs to do well. But he really doesn't have that capability in states like Florida, Ohio, Michigan, the whole row of primary states that are coming out. I actually thought that was one of his poorer moments in the debate, particularly because his foreign policy is so antithetical to most Republicans. I thought his best moments were actually some of his more lighthearted humor, his references mm-hmm. to his wife, his references to his yes. own physical health. When he plays the kind of kindly uncle or the jokey grandpa, I think he gets more mileage than when he goes down his conspiratorial road.
Rubin writes the Right Turn blog for the Washington Post. We are flat out of time. Thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.